The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, baseball is just getting off to a hot start this season. I mean, last week we had a bunch of shit going on, and this week the hot streaks continue. And so let's get started with a little bit of a breakdown on the week of baseball. On Monday night, Texas starting pitcher Andrew Haney. Only reason why I'm bringing this dude up is because he passed Nolan Ryan for a Texas Rangers record. So anytime you pass the great Nolan Ryan, yeah, you're in my opinion, you're going to be, you're going to get some type of mention. And he actually had 9 consecutive strikeouts in a row. He struck out nine batters in a row, and he passed Nolan Ryan for the Texas Rangers record. So that's a big deal in an 11-2 win against the Kansas City Royals. So not only did he break the record, but his team got a big win too. And then on Tuesday night, Arias from the Miami Marlins, he hit the first cycle ever for the Miami Marlins. Nobody who's ever played for the Miami Marlins has ever hit for a cycle. He hit for a cycle. If you're not aware of what a cycle is, that means you got a single, a double, a triple, and a home run. So you basically hit everything out of the park that day. And that's what he did. And I mean, really, to me, Luis Arias is one of the, he's a very underrated player because he's extremely consistent with when he comes up to bat. I mean, last year he led the league in batting average. So it's just because he doesn't usually, you know, have a bunch of home runs or hit the ball out of the park or anything. I kind of feel like a lot of people overlook him, but he's an excellent hitter and he's extremely consistent. So it's not shocking to see him hit for a cycle. And also the Miami Marlins got a win that night against the Philadelphia Phillies 8-4. So not only did they get they got the cycle, but they also got the win too. Then that same night, Tuesday night, I do not know what's going on in Baltimore right now, but not only are they playing good baseball right now, you know, you got Adley Rutschman. He was the rookie last year for them, rookie catcher, and this year he is going off. It's just fantastic to see, but we're not going to be talking about him. We're going to be talking about Ryan Mountcastle. He had 9 RBIs on Tuesday night against the Oakland A's in a win against the Oakland A's, 12-8 win, which ended up tying a Baltimore Orioles record. But not only did he get the 9 RBI, but it was in clutch moments. The dude had 2 home runs and a freaking grand slam. So, and I mean, every time he came up to bat, it mattered. They took the lead or tied the game when he came up to bat. So not only did he have just a fantastic game stats-wise, it came in handy at the end, but I don't know what's going on with the Orioles. Who knows if this is going to last all season for them? I mean, right now the AL East is just stacked with teams. I'm going to talk about another AL East team here in a bit, but I mean, you got the Orioles starting the season off hot. You got the Yankees who they should always be right up there, especially with how good of a team they have this season. The Red Sox, not so much. The Blue Jays, looking phenomenal. And then, of course, we have the Tampa Bay Rays. Yesterday, got their 13th win in a row. Yes, they have started off the season 13-0. That is the first time that has happened in this league since the 1987 Milwaukee Brewers, and then in 1982, the Atlanta Braves. Those are the only two other teams who have started off the season 13-0. This ties them for second. The longest record that's ever happened was in 1884 with a 20 win in a row streak, and I can't even remember the team's name because it's not a team that exists anymore. But that's how long ago it's been since the team has started off this freaking hot. And it's not, the Rays aren't just starting off 13-0. They are absolutely obliterating their opponents. They have outscored their opponents by 71 runs. Yeah, they've scored 101 runs to their opponents' 30 runs. 101 to 30. That's nuts. That's the third largest margin of difference to start the season in Major League Baseball history. Right now, their stat line is they have 101 runs on the season, 32 home runs, and a 940 OPS. This team's offense is just lights out. Their pitching is fantastic. They're playing great on defense. You don't want to be overlooking these Rays. I don't think this is a fluky start. As like I said, this AL East is looking damn good. I don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, it's very early in the season. Anything, you know, injuries, of course, affect everything. And then it's a long season, so usually there's always ebbs and flows. But this Tampa Bay Rays team looks pretty damn legit, right up there with those Orioles look pretty damn legit. Those Yankees look pretty damn legit, and the Blue Jays look pretty damn legit. It's just the Red Sox are the only bottom. Shockingly, the Red Sox are the bottom barrel right now of the AL East. It's crazy, but what the Tampa Bay Rays are doing right now, it's nuts, and it's cool to watch, just because. They've been a team on the come up for many years. Actually, I mean, they're only a couple years removed from the World Series. What they lost in 2020 to the Dodgers, so you know they've been there, and they went a few years before that as well. And they've always their farm system has been very very nice. They just always tend to find these great starting pitchers and these really nice. Five-tool players. You know, you got Wander Franco, who's just great defensively, but he's also fantastic offensively. And they're just, you got Randy Arozarena as well, who's just a straight hitter. This team is really damn good. And I kind of feel like they're similar to the Houston Astros, whereas the Houston Astros pretty much started building up their team as well about, 10-ish years ago. You know, they got the first, I think 2 years in a row, they actually got the first pick in the draft and really just started building up their organization through the draft and through the farm system. And here they are. They're one of the most dominating teams in the league. And I kind of feel like that's what the Rays are doing right now. So I know it's early, but the Rays are looking like a front runner for the World Series, but we got a long way to go, but it's just a historic run. And like I said, this baseball season, we're only 2 weeks in, and here we are talking about historic things happening. So let's move on to basketball, because tonight we have the last two play-in games, and then tomorrow kicks off the first round of the NBA playoffs. As you may know, on the last show, Monday show, I actually made all my predictions on what I think is going to happen in the NBA Finals. My NBA Finals prediction is the Phoenix Suns versus the Milwaukee Bucks, with the Milwaukee Bucks as the champions. So if you did not hear that, that's what I have going. I will probably remind you all, especially if my teams lose. So, because I couldn't care less if I'm right or wrong. It doesn't matter. Let's get started on the NBA play-in games. The last two games are tonight, starting with the Eastern Conference matchup between the Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat. Chicago played a crazy game the other night, they were able to just take out Toronto and send them packing. They were down by, I can't recall how far they were down, but they were down by double digits, and they were able to make this great second half comeback and get themselves another shot at potentially getting into the playoffs. Miami Heat kind of laid a stinker, but I feel like they're going to bounce back in this one. I think they're the better team than the Bulls. I think the Bulls' last win was just kind of a fluky win, and I feel like the Miami Heat are a better team and will get the win tonight and move on and get that last playoff spot and be the number eight seed in the first round. So they would go on to play the Bucks, and that first game would be on Sunday. And as I said, I picked the Bucks to be the champions. So who do you think I'm picking in this matchup? Well, I'm absolutely picking the Bucks, because as I said, they're head and shoulders above everybody else. The Heat have not been that consistent this season. They've really been a streaky team. I think they're a good team, but they just haven't they have the, it's just like 1 week they're up, then the next week they're down. And I mean, that last game was a stinker. And so I feel like this game in the play-in will be a good game. And then once they hit the series, I feel like the Bucks are just going to have way too much going on in the paint for them to handle. And I feel like the Bucks will move on in a sweep against the Miami Heat. And then the last NBA play-in game tonight is in the Western Conference matchup, Oklahoma City Thunder versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Timberwolves, they actually played a really good game against the Lakers the other night. Actually, it was a very sloppy game against the Lakers. It kind of looked like nobody wanted to win that game. But Gobert is still not going to be playing in this matchup. Whereas the Thunder, they actually play a really good team ball. And they look to be on a very nice hot streak. And the Timberwolves just have way too much problems at the wrong time, too much disarray, too much infighting between the players. They don't really seem to play cohesively at this moment, whereas the Oklahoma City Thunder, they're rolling, especially on the offensive side of things. So I think Oklahoma City's going to win tonight, and they will take that last playoff spot in the Western Conference as the number 8 seed, and they will play the Denver Nuggets on Sunday night. And while I do think they could put up a fight in the games, I feel like the Nuggets, even though the Nuggets have kind of been falling apart these last couple of weeks, which is not how you want to head into the playoffs, I'm not going to disrespect the Nuggets in the first round of the playoffs. I think they will dominate the Thunder, and they will sweep the Thunder in 4. All right, so then let's talk about all the set first-round playoff matchups in the NBA, beginning in the Eastern Conference with the Saturday matchups. So tomorrow we have the number 6 seeded Brooklyn Nets versus the number 3 seeded Philadelphia 76ers. The Brooklyn Nets are just lucky to be here. I mean, really, with the way their season's gone, you know, they don't have Durant anymore. They don't have Kyrie Irving anymore. Ben Simmons started his period, so he's back on the injured list. So I don't even know who plays for this team, quite frankly. I guess I'll find out once the games get going, but I just kind of feel like the Philadelphia 76ers are ready to make a run at a championship. While I picked the Bucks to win it all, I think the 76ers are probably their biggest threat in the Eastern Conference just because they can match up really well against them. And against Brooklyn, I kind of feel like they're just going to dominate. I feel like this is going to be a nice first-round warm-up for the 76ers, and I think the 76ers are going to sweep the Brooklyn Nets, and that series begins tomorrow. Then the other Eastern Conference matchup that begins tomorrow is the number 8-seeded Atlanta Hawks. They took the number 7 seed. The number 7-seeded Atlanta Hawks versus the number 2-seed Boston Celtics. And Atlanta, they're just another team that's similar to the Timberwolves and the Nets, really, where the Hawks, I feel like, are just kind of lucky to be here. They had so much disarray this entire season and just a bunch of drama with Trae Young, which sucks because I think Trae Young is a great talent, but it just sucks when you see this drama and it kind of feels like he's wasting his talent by bitching about shit because obviously he's the issue. When your first coach this season gets fired mid-season because he's got issues with you, and now you've got issues with listening to the new coach, and the season's not even over, and they're already talking about how next year they're basically exploring their options to trade Trae Young, I kind of feel like that's not a good way to head into a series against the number 2-seeded Boston Celtics, who are the defending Eastern Conference champs, who still look damn good this year. You got Jason Tatum, who's playing at an MVP level. They're getting all of their players back from injury. So this is a solid Boston Celtics team who I think will dominate this Atlanta Hawks team. I think Atlanta will be lucky to get one win, and I think Boston's going to win this series in 5 games. And then the last Eastern Conference matchup that also begins on Saturday, number 5-seeded New York Knicks versus the number 4-seeded Cleveland Cavaliers. I feel like out of the Eastern Conference, this is probably going to be the best matchup because both of these teams match up well against each other. It's too bad that Julius Randle is injured because really, who knows what his status is, as well as if he plays, who knows how effective he's going to be. He and Jalen Brunson have just really had such a phenomenal season. The Knicks play really good defense, and they're really good offensively. They're great in the paint. And the Cavaliers, they've just had a phenomenal season. Donovan Mitchell has been, he's been the absolute missing piece that they needed. He's come right in, picked up all these young, scrappy dudes who just play really good basketball. That's all they needed was a nice, solid veteran to step in, who could score a bunch of points, who could take over games. But all of his role players are there to make the rebounds, to get the assist, to just make sure that everything's in order. And the Cavaliers, I feel like, are a really good team. And I felt like, while I don't think they're a championship contender yet, because I don't think they have enough to withstand the power in the paint like the Bucks and the 76ers have, but I feel like the Cavaliers are right there, and they're going to fuck up somebody's postseason. And I think it's going to start with the Knicks, just because they're beat up. And I think it's going to be a good series. I think it's going to go six games, but I've got the Cleveland Cavaliers winning this series in six games. And then moving to the Western Conference, the series that begins tomorrow night in the Western Conference is the Golden State Warriors, the number six seeded Golden State Warriors versus the number three seeded Sacramento Kings. This is going to be a fantastic matchup to watch. Just because the Kings have been one of the hottest teams this year. Huge freaking surprise, especially to me. I did not expect them to be good whatsoever. Golden State, they're the defending champions. But they've had their ups and downs all season long. Now, they are healthy. So they're headed into the playoffs in a good spot. But I think the Kings, they're going to be running into a buzzsaw. Because the Golden State Warriors, this is where they win. They are a dynasty. This team has won multiple championships over the past, what, freaking six, 7 years now. This team is great. And it doesn't matter what seed they are. Even if they were a play-in team, I would not overlook the Golden State Warriors. One, they have Steph Curry. We all know what that dude could do. Two, they have Draymond Green. That dude, we all know what he could do. They got Klay Thompson. We all know what he could do. They got Jordan Poole. I mean, this team, and they're getting Andrew Wiggins back as well. So this team knows how to win in the postseason. This Sacramento Kings team does not. And I haven't really believed in them, just because they don't play defense very well. So while I think their season has been phenomenal, I think, unfortunately for them, they're going up against the more veteran stacked team. And it sucks for them that they're not facing like a Lakers team, because if they were facing the Lakers, I think they would win that series. But since they're facing the Golden State Warriors, the defending champs, the dynasty team with Hall of Fame players on it, Hall of Fame coach on it, I mean, this team knows how to win. You cannot overlook the Golden State Warriors for a championship, even though they're not that good of a team this year. Well, they're a good team, but they haven't played consistently. You can't overlook them. And I do have the Golden State Warriors winning this series in six games. But I do expect it to be a really fun, fantastic series to watch. I feel like if you're going to watch any series, like if you're not really a basketball fan, just a casual fan, and you want to turn on some playoff games, probably the best matchup to watch is going to be this Golden State Warriors versus Sacramento Kings series. Probably. Just because since the Kings haven't been in the playoffs in a million years, it might turn out to be a stinker because they have no playoff experience. And that tends to happen. So who knows, but I think it's going to be a good series. Then the last two Western Conference matchups, these both begin on Sunday, beginning with the number seven-seeded Los Angeles Lakers versus the number two-seeded Memphis Grizzlies. The Lakers have been a shit show all season long. They haven't played consistent basketball ever at one point this season. Even everybody wants to rave about the last couple of weeks of the season, and to me that's like whoopty fucking goddamn dude. Ooh, we looked decent the last 2 weeks of the year. Well, come on, that's not championship basketball, for Christ's sake. It's crappy basketball, in my opinion. I mean, did you watch that Timberwolves game? That was awful. That was some of the worst basketball I've ever had to watch in my life. It was like no team wanted to win that game. They were both like trying to lose the fucking game. But the Lakers came out on top, and congratulations to them. Unfortunately for them, they're going up against the Grizzlies, who are a legit team, who've played very consistent ball. They play well on the defensive side of things. They're spectacular in the paint. John Morant is getting his groove back. He seems to be focused and back to playing basketball, and that's the perfect time to be doing it. Steven Adams looks like he's definitely injured and probably going to miss at least the first game. I don't know how much of the series he's going to play, if at all. But to me, it doesn't matter in this series because I just don't think the Lakers are a good team. They haven't played good basketball all season long, and I don't fucking care what anybody says. Everybody thinks LeBron just walks in and wins the championship, and it's like, why don't you go take a look at every year he's been with the Lakers, and the one and only successful year we've had is 2020 when it was a shortened season when we won the championship. Other than that, we really haven't gone past the fucking first round of the playoffs, so let's get over this LeBron wins everything and walks in and he's the magic king who does everything. Nah. This is the Grizzlies. They're a damn good team. They're going to kick our ass in 5 games is my prediction on that series. I don't even think it's going to be a good series at all. I think the Lakers are going to look like trash, like they've looked all fucking season long. And then the last matchup in the Western Conference first round, we have, which begins on Sunday, we have the number 5-seeded Los Angeles Clippers against the number 4-seeded Phoenix Suns. I think this is going to be a fantastic series as well. Even though it looks like Paul George will not be playing for the Clippers have actually played well. They're not blowing anybody out of the water, but they're playing well. And the Suns are actually, they've been getting hot. And Kevin Durant, he's going to be here for the playoffs. Devin Booker has been on fire all season long. Chris Paul dishing the ball. And then you've got DeAndre Ayton, who looks much, much improved from last year. So, and this team, they know how to win as well. They may not have won a championship, but they've been the most dominating team in the Western Conference the last couple of years. And they've made playoff runs. And Kevin Durant is a championship caliber guy. I kind of feel like he's that guy who could show them in when it comes down to it, like if they're ever down at one point, he can look at them and go, yo, this is what it takes to win a championship. Just do this, that, and the other. Get me the ball. Let's go. I mean, you're going to have to guard either Booker or Durant. Take your choice because those two dudes are two of the coldest scorers in the game. So I just think the Phoenix Suns are going to have way too much firepower for the Clippers to handle. And the Clippers, they've just never been a good team. There's no need to ever believe in them until they give us a reason to believe in them. So I've got the Phoenix Suns winning a good series in 7 games. All right, so that's the NBA playoffs this weekend, beginning Saturday night. But the play-ins, the last 2 play-in games are tonight. So we've got that to look forward to this weekend. And now let's get to the top 10 list this week. You may have noticed over the last couple of weeks, I've been doing GOAT lists, if you will. I've ranked my greatest UFC champions of all time. I've ranked my great who I think are the greatest NBA players of all time. And so with that, since it's baseball season, I might as well do the top 10 greatest baseball players of all time, and I'm just going to call it the top 10 MLB GOATs for short. These are the 10 greatest players who I feel like of all time to ever play baseball. Now, the parameters on this one are pretty similar to the last two. Now, of course, I've mentioned many, many, many times on this show, nothing matters to me more than championships. Nothing. It's a stat that matters to me because that means you're the best. Even if it's one, if you don't have any, that doesn't mean you can't be great, but it's hard to put you above certain people. Now, in baseball, it's kind of different because there are, I think, 2 or 3 guys on my list who don't have championships. But the thing about baseball is to be a GOAT, it's not just championships. It's a number. Baseball has always been a number sport. So your dominance is kind of what I'm going off of. Now, of course, championships really, they do play a role in how some of these guys are ranked. But really it's their impact at the time they played. I mean, some of these guys, they were the dude who you wanted to be or who you wanted to beat or just who you wanted on your team. or they just changed the game in some way, shape, or form. Just their straight up domination, maybe as a hitter, as a home run hitter, and just all around numbers, how many MVPs they have. And like I said, championships do matter to me. All of these guys are Hall of Famers, by the way. I did find it amusing that there really is only on my list technically one real starting pitcher. I have two, but one played pitcher and hitter, and he didn't end his career. He's not known as a pitcher, really. There's one real solid starting pitcher on here. The rest are all hitters. That's pretty much what they're known for. I mean, that is what this game's really about. But I mean, I found it interesting that once I started to whittle it down, I was like, wow, that's very odd. Now, it's also very odd because, I mean, like I said, baseball is a numbers sport. And the reason why is because some of these records still stand today. And when I got to number one, like, it made me laugh so hard because you can't even argue number one, in my opinion, when you just, like, compare his stats to everything and you look at him and you go, he still owns this stat? Like, it's nuts. And you say that with a lot of these guys, just because some of them, like I said, they're really old. I mean, none of these players are current players, by the way. Also, none of them were accused of steroids or cheating or any of that. Now, I've said many, many times when it comes to baseball and steroids, I don't condone that they did it. I don't support that they did it. I think it sucks for the players who didn't do it and had to play with them, and maybe some of their careers suffered because of it, for whatever reason, because they could have lost a spot on the team because a Reuter, quote, did better than them, or they didn't get the good contracts because the Reuters did and they decided not to do it. But I didn't include any of them on there just because they did technically cheat. That is cheating. But like I said, I don't hold it against them because the steroid era, unfortunately, everybody encouraged it from top to bottom. And it's not their fault that that was the times. And it just, to me, that's my outlook on it. I totally get people who call them cheaters. I'm never going to argue with anybody if they don't. I think it's stupid to say I don't think Barry Bonds is the all-time home run leader, even though he is. It's the stat. But if you don't like him and you don't like to count his stats, I get it because he did cheat the game. But he is technically the home run leader, and to say it didn't happen, you sound like an idiot who stormed the Capitol, in my opinion. But I digress. Anyway, so no steroid era players are in here. Well, there are guys who played in the steroid era, but they never tested positive. There wasn't even really accusations about these guys. So they technically were clean. So like I said, none of them made my top 10, even though because when I do these type of lists, I like to see what other people rank others as. And I did see some people put Barry Bonds in their goats and everything. I even considered Roger Clemens because I do personally, I think Roger Clemens is, him and Nolan Ryan are the two greatest pitchers in my opinion, at least from what I've watched. I obviously haven't seen any of the old-timey pitchers, and a lot of them were spectacular as well. Also, Negro League players, too. There were a lot of amazing pitchers who didn't even get the opportunity to play in the pros that a lot of us don't know about. But in my lifetime and of watching pitchers and just kind of their complete domination, to me, Nolan Ryan and Roger Clemens were two of the greatest of all time. And by the way, neither one of them are on my list. Like I said, Roger Clemens is not because he more than likely did steroids. There's not like a positive test or anything. But if you remember and you can look it up, he was involved in this dumb, stupid shit against Congress and all that. And basically, he did steroids. And then I didn't include Nolan Ryan because while I think he's an extremely dominating pitcher, I don't think he was as dominating as the one pitcher on here. Plus, his championships, it held him back just a little bit. He definitely would be in my top 15, but I was kind of surprised I didn't even include him just because I just think the stats of some of these other players are much more greater than his. But that's kind of the parameters that we're working with here on my top 10 MLB GOATs. So let's begin with number 10, and that would be Ken Griffey Jr. He played from 1989 to 2010, center fielder who played with the Seattle Mariners, the Cincinnati Reds, and the White Sox. Now, he had no championships, and so that to me is one of the few, that's like his only accomplishment he has never had. But the thing about Ken Griffey Jr. is he is one of the greatest hitters ever. If you watch, to me, Ken Griffey is... he had like the same impact Jordan had on NBA, and they both played around the same times too. Griffey was just a cool dude who you wanted to be, and when you watch this guy hit a home run, it's the most beautiful thing ever. I think Ken Griffey Jr. probably has the most beautiful swing of all time. Just, I would love to just sit and watch Ken Griffey Jr. do batting practice. And I'm not the only one. As a matter of fact, I believe he was at the World Baseball Classic just talking to all the Team USA guys. And he took batting practice with them. And they were like little kids watching Ken Griffey Jr. just take swings. And the dude still can rake. It's still a beautiful thing to watch Ken Griffey Jr. hit a ball. And it's also, it's not his fault he didn't win a championship. I mean, first of all, he was drafted by the Seattle Mariners. And yes, they actually did have some good seasons with him. They actually almost made a World Series. But it's just, unfortunately for Ken Griffey Jr., he was pretty much the main player on their team. And the thing with baseball and championships, baseball is the most difficult sport to win a championship in. And not only just one, but to repeat and win multiple championships. That's actually truth. That it's more difficult to repeat as a champion in baseball than it is in any other sport. So that's one of the reasons, another reason why I included guys who don't have championships on my top 10 here, because I would have never considered that in my NBA. I'm not considering it in my NFL one whenever I get to that one. But in baseball, I did. Because in baseball, it's not your fault sometimes. Sometimes you're on a really fucking shitty team. I mean, do we hold it against Mike Trout that he's been playing for the Angels? Nah. He's still been one of the best players, five-tool all-around player, which Griffey was, too, because that's who we're talking about, of course. But I'm just pointing out that Mike Trout's played for a shitty team, and we all know he's been one of the best players in the league since the day he hit the major leagues. But anyways, with Ken Griffey Jr., he has no championships, I don't even think he played in a World Series, right? Yeah, I don't even think he did. He's a 13-time All-Star. He did win the AL MVP award in 1997. He's a 10-time Gold Glove Award winner, and that's a big deal to me. That's another reason why he's on here, because not only was he spectacular with the bat, but the dude was great on defense. You don't win 10 Gold Gloves for nothing, and he did. He was fantastic on the defensive side of the ball. He was also a 7-time Silver Slugger Award winner. He was the NL Comeback Player of the Year in 2005. He was a 4-time AL home run leader in 1994, 97, 98, and 99. He was the AL RBI leader in 1997. His career stat, he's also a member of the Major League Baseball All-Century team. His career stats are a batting average of .284. He's got 2,781 hits, 630 home runs, and 1,836 RBI. So it's just the impact at the time. And, you know, Ken Griffey, who has anything bad to say about Ken Griffey Jr.? I mean, really, I honestly have yet to meet a person who hates Ken Griffey Jr. And that says a lot, because I feel like every athlete, I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of people who hate him, but I personally have yet to meet a person and go, I hated watching Ken Griffey Jr. I'm like, really? But I don't think any baseball fan really hated him, just because, like I said, watching him hit a ball is just beautiful. And he was such a fantastic player to watch. And I just really enjoyed him. And I felt like he had to be in my top 10. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB GOATs, this is my only starting pitcher. I have Greg Maddux. He played from 1986 to 2008. He played with the Chicago Cubs, the Atlanta Braves, the Los Angeles Dodgers, and the San Diego Padres. He is a one-time champion in 1995. To me, Greg Maddux, I know it's not sexy because, I would have thought I would have put Nolan Ryan in here. But really, Greg Maddux's domination, especially at the time he played, is something else. First of all, he played in the steroid era. And he dominated those guys, even though they were on steroids. So that's one starting point. Also, there was a lot of good pitchers. You know, you had Randy Johnson playing in this era. You had Roger Clemens, even though he was a Reuter, you still had him. You had Andy Pettit. It's just there were a lot of good players in this era. But I mean, when you're the type of player, he's just so known for no hitters. It's called pitching a Maddux. If you like Sandy Alcantara, who threw a no hitter the other night, he pitched a Maddux because pitching a Maddux means you threw a no hitter in less than 100 pitches. That's called pitching a Maddux. If you have something like that named after you, that means you're a spectacular pitcher. And then also just when you look at his career stats and just his complete and utter domination from start to finish, even when he ended his career, it wasn't dominating, but it wasn't bad either. So here are some of his other stats. He's an 8-time All-Star, 4-time Cy Young winner, 4-time NL Cy Young winner. He won 4 straight, by the way, 4 straight Cy Youngs. He is an 18-time Gold Glove Award winner, and that is why he made my top 10. Pitchers winning the Gold Glove is a big fucking deal. When you win it 18 times, that means you're the fucking best at what you do. No pitcher has come close to winning 18 Gold Gloves. This dude has won 18 Gold Gloves. His defense is so fucking on point. I mean, really, Maddux is kind of a boring pitcher. Compared to a lot of other pitchers in the league, he's kind of boring. But that's why he was so goddamn good, because he knew all you had to do was be great at defense. All you had to do was just pitch the shit out of these dudes and boom, 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 you're done. Maddux was just spectacular. And to be an 18-time Gold Glove Award winner, that is why I put him above Nolan Ryan. That. Because, whoa. He was also a 3-time NL wins leader, 4-time MLB ERA leader. He's also the only pitcher in MLB history to win at least 15 games for 17 straight seasons. As I said, he owns the most Gold Gloves by any player, not just pitcher, by any player ever. He has the most putouts by a pitcher with 546, and tied a live ball era record of 39 putouts in a season in 1990, 91, and 93. He won more games than any pitcher in the 90s. He's 8th all-time on the career wins list. And I mean, he really just, he's just one of the greatest pitchers of all time. Some of his career stats, his win-loss record is 355 wins, 227 losses. His career ERA is 3.16, and he's got 3,371 strikeouts. So he is one of only 10 pitchers ever to achieve both 300 wins and 3,000 strikeouts. And he's the only pitcher to record more than 300 wins and more than 3,000 strikeouts and fewer than 1,000 walks. He actually has 999 walks overall. So Greg Maddux, I don't think a lot of people would think of him right off the bat as a GOAT. But when you just look at this dude's domination, yeah, he's a GOAT. And that, in my opinion, makes him the greatest pitcher of all time. All right, so at number 8 on my top 10 MLB GOATs, I have Stan Musial. He played from 1941 to 1944, then had to go to war in 1945, so he did not play that season, and then he came back in 1946 and played till 1963. He was an outfielder and a first baseman. He played his entire career with the St. Louis Cardinals. He is also a 3-time champion. He won championships in 1942, 1944, and 1946. Stan Musial is one of the greatest hitters, hands down, of all time. He was just, that's what he was known for, Stan the Man. They love him in St. Louis. And he to be a three-time champion also at that time, I mean, the Yankees were such a dominating team in those days to get that many championships and be that dominating. He just totally was. And just not only did he do spectacular behind the plate, but he was also great defensively as well. Some of his other stats, he's a 24-time All-Star, three-time NL MVP award winner. He won the MVP in 43, 46, and 48. He's a seven-time NL batting champion, two-time NL RBI leader, and he's a part of the Major League Baseball All-Century team. His career stats, batting average 331, 3,630 hits, 475 home runs, and 1,951 runs batted in. And Stan Musial, yeah, just one of the greatest to ever touch a bat, ever. Just his domination at the plate. Just go look at some of the stats, because here's the thing with all of these guys that I'm naming off. I'm not even naming off all of their stats. I'm just kind of doing a generalization. There are some of these dudes where I'm like, I don't got the time for this shit to add every single fucking stat of theirs. So, yeah, go look up Stan the Man. Dude was a killer in his era. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB GOATs, I have Ted Williams. He played from 1939 to 1942. Then he also had to go to war, and then he came back in 1946, played till 1960. He primarily played left field. He played his entire career with the Boston Red Sox. He never won a championship, but this guy's domination at the plate with a bat can never, ever, ever be overlooked. This guy, it's nuts what he did at the plate. So he's a 19-time All-Star. He's a two-time AL MVP. He won the MVP in 46 and 49. He is a two-time Triple Crown winner in 1942 and 1947. That means he led the league in home runs, RBI, and batting average. He did that twice. That doing it once is insane. Doing it twice is like, what the fuck? He's a six-time AL batting champion, four-time AL home run leader, four-time AL RBI leader. He has an MLB record 482 career on-base percentage, and he's the last batter ever, and he last played in 1960 to bat 400 for a season. That is nuts. He's also a part of the Major League Baseball All-Century team and the Major League Baseball All-Time team, because as a hitter, this guy was great. As I said, the reason why he doesn't have championships is because, unfortunately, these Red Sox teams he played for weren't that good. And so you have a tough time winning championships if you don't really get there. And then also the couple of years, I mean, he took multiple years off in between to go fight in war. So who knows what his career would have ended up if he didn't have to take those few years off. And then his career stats, batting average 344, 2,654 hits, 521 home runs, 1,839 runs batted in. And then, as I said, a 482 on-base percentage, which is a record still to this day. So, yeah, Ted Williams, damn good hitter. Then at number 6 on my top 10 MLB GOATs, Mickey Mantle, played from 1951 to 1968, center fielder, and played his entire career with the New York Yankees. He is a 7-time champion. He won championships in 51, 52, 53, 56, 58, 61, and 62. Mickey Mantle, he's just known as one of the greatest hitters of all time. He was probably obviously Babe Ruth was the first, like, real home run hitter, but Mickey Mantle, man, he was that dude when you read about him. He's a 20-time All-Star, three-time AL MVP. He won the MVP in 56, 57, and 62. He is a Triple Crown winner in 1956. He's a Gold Glove Award winner, AL batting champion, four-time AL home run leader, AL RBI leader, and he's also a part of the Major League Baseball All-Century team. His career stats, batting average of 298, 2,415 hits, 536 home runs, and 1,509 RBI. He was just this Yankees team. It's crazy when you look at the Yankees, their history, because you think they all dominate at the same time, and they really don't, because now I'm going to talk about another Yankee after this guy who dominated in the 30s. But Mantle dominated in the 50s and the 60s, and it's just like, it's like, whoa. It's crazy how many generational players they get. And I know everybody likes to think it's, oh, they buy everybody. And yeah, in certain instances, they do buy. They spend a lot of money. But you know what? They haven't won a championship in, since, what, 2009? So it's been quite some time since the Yankees have won. They don't always win. But Mickey Mantle was generational. And it's crazy how many generational, amazing players the Yankees have ended up with. And Mickey Mantle was one of them. And now when we get to number five, here's another one. Number five on my top 10 MLB GOATs. Lou Gehrig played from 1923 to 1939. He was first baseman for the New York Yankees. Also played his entire career as a New York Yankee. He's a six-time champion. He won in 1927, 28, 32, 36, 37, and 38. So he also dominated the 20s and the 30s. Probably could have dominated a lot more because, unfortunately, if we all... You should be aware of the of ALS, which is also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Unfortunately, his career was cut short at a really, really early age. I believe 32, 33. It was early 30s. So he had plenty of more baseball in him. This dude could have even more championships and more records. But unfortunately, he got ALS and he died like a year later after he was diagnosed with it too. But Lou Gehrig, man, when you watch this guy hit a ball, you know, I was talking about Ken Griffey Jr. hitting a ball. Lou Gehrig, that's what that dude was born to do. Oh, my God. Watching him hit home runs, it's something else as well. That's another guy I would have loved to watch batting practice of. Just see him hit a home run. It's just probably gives you goosebumps. He was a seven-time All-Star. Two-time AL MVP in 1927 and 1936. He won a Triple Crown in 1934. AL batting champion. Three-time AL home run leader. Five-time AL RBI leader. He hit four home runs in one game on June 3rd, 1932. He's also a member of the Major League Baseball All-Century team and the Major League Baseball All-Time team. Some of his career stats, batting average of .340. 2,721 hits, 493 home runs, and 1,995 RBI. It's kind of crazy just to think of what Lou Gehrig's career could have been. And some of those numbers, I mean, you look at them and you look at the home runs especially, he probably, if he played till he was like 40, man, that guy would probably have, he probably would have been the number you were trying to beat for the home run leaders at one point. But he was something else, and he was just meant to play baseball. Obviously, that's what, because I mean, that's all he did while he was here, because he lived such a short life, and there's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion. He just looked fantastic doing it. He was a great Yankee and a great player, and one of the greatest of all time, who we still recognize. And he played in the 20s and 30s, for Christ's sake. So that's what I mean about these baseball players. They made such an impact, and their numbers and what they did for the game still matters from dudes who played in the 20s and 30s. And now when we get to number four, a dude who played even earlier than these guys, he was going on my list. He doesn't have any championships, but I don't give a fuck. This guy better be on your list. If you are a true, real deal baseball fan, this motherfucker better be on your list somewhere. I don't care where. You can rank him wherever you want, but he's at number four on my top 10 MLB GOATs, and that is Ty Cobb. Played from 1905 to 1928, center fielder, played for the Detroit Tigers and the Philadelphia A's. He has no championships, and that does not matter to me because this dude was a GOAT. This is the first, like, baseball player. I mean, he was meant to do it all. And you all know, dirty ass motherfucker, he would come right at you, spikes out. But that's not all he was about, though. He just was a fantastic baseball player. He was meant to hit the ball. He played great defensively. He just was such a great baseball player. You can't not have Ty Cobb on here. And by the way, it once again, not his fault he doesn't have any championships, because he played his heart out in every single game this dude played. He was the AL MVP in 1911, Triple Crown winner in 1909, 12-time AL batting champion, AL home run leader, 4-time AL RBI leader, 6-time AL stolen base leader, Major League Baseball All-Century Team. He also has an MLB record, .366 career batting average. MLB record. He played in 1905 to 1928, people. That record still stands to this day. That's what I mean about baseball. This guy played in 1905. 1905! Like, okay? And he still owns records to this day. And he just, baseball fans know, Ty Cobb was the shit. His career stats, like I just said, career batting average, .366. 4,189 hits, 117 home runs, 1,944 RBI, and 897 stolen bases, because that's what that dude did a lot of. When he would come spikes out, it was when he was stealing a base lots of times. He would steal home like crazy. Stealing home, it's probably one of the most fun baseball plays to watch, just because it's so rare to happen. But with Ty Cobb, wasn't that rare. Watch out for the spikes, though. But Ty Cobb, oh, fantastic baseball player. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB GOATs, Hank Aaron. Played from 1954 to 1976. Right fielder, played with the Milwaukee/Atlanta Braves, and then also played with the Milwaukee Brewers. He won a championship once, but Hank Aaron is known as the home run king. If you don't consider Barry Bonds to be the home run king, this is who you think the home run king is, because that's whose record he broke. Hank Aaron, that's what he was known for. This dude hit home runs like no other. If you were watching baseball in this era, you wanted to watch Hank Aaron at bat. Every single at bat, you wanted to see Hank Aaron, because you knew chances are that shit was going out of the park. He is a 25-time All-Star, which is a record. He is an NL MVP in 1957, 3-time Gold Glove Award winner. So he also, yes, we know him for hitting home runs. The original home run king, in my opinion, I feel like he is the home run king. I mean, I consider Barry Bonds to be the record holder, but Hank Aaron is the home run king, just because that's what he was. But he was also known for his defense as well. When you win Gold Glove Awards, you're great at defense. He's also a 2-time NL batting champion, 4-time NL home run leader, 4-time NL RBI leader. Major League Baseball, part of a Major League Baseball All-Century team. A couple of the MLB records he still owns to this day. 2,297 career RBI, 6,856 career total bases, and 1,477 career extra base hits. These records still stand today, and he last played in 1976. So his career stats, batting average of .305, hits 3,771, 755 home runs, which was a all-time record up until, 2008? No, I think it was earlier than that, 2005. It was in the 2000s, but when Barry Bonds broke it. But 755 home runs, that was nuts. And then he had 2,297 career RBI. Just Hank Aaron was that dude. He was the home run king. He will forever be the home run king, because that's just what he did, man. And he was just a fantastic baseball player to watch, and definitely one of the greatest of all time. Then at number two on my top 10 MLB GOATs, Willie Mays. He played for the Negro League in 1948. Then he hit the major leagues in 1951 to 1952. Then he had to go to war. Then came back in 1954, played till 1973. Primarily played center fielder, known as probably the greatest center fielder of all time, by the way. He played for the Birmingham Black Barons when he played for the Negro League, and then he played for the New York/San Francisco Giants, and then ended his career as a New York Met. He won one championship in 1954, but this dude was mostly known for his defense. Yes, he was fantastic with the bat, but if you look at career highlights of Willie Mays, it was all about the defense. This guy, he made one of the most known catches of all time. It's him running backwards with his freaking glove out and just makes this beautiful behind the head catch, which he's not even looking at the freaking ball, but makes the catch. Just Willie Mays, great, great player. 24-time All-Star, two-time NL MVP in 1954, 1965, NL Rookie of the Year in 1951, 12-time Gold Glove Award winner from 1957 to 1968. Yeah, he won all 12 of them straight. He's a Roberto Clemente Award winner in 1971, NL batting champion, four-time NL home run leader, four-time NL stolen base leader. He hit four home runs in one game on April 30th in 1961. He's a part of the Major League Baseball All-Century team and the Major League Baseball All-Time team. So as you hear in there, his defense was amazing, but also, too, he was spectacular behind the bat, behind the plate. And he just, he was a home run leader. He was a stolen base leader. He was the ultimate five-tool player. When you talk about a five-tool player, that means you are great at everything. That means you are great in the field. That means you're great at the plate. That means you get the stolen bases. You just do every single thing that the game asks you to do, and you're great at all of it. And that's what was great about Willie Mays. His career stats: 302 batting average, 3,283 hits, 660 home runs. 660 home runs. That's a, like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of home runs. And the dude was known for his defense. 1,903 RBI and 338 stolen bases. All right, guys. Number one is inarguable. In-fucking-arguable. Number one on my top 10 MLB GOATs is Babe Ruth. And the reason why it's inarguable is the dude's records that he owns, he gets one whole Wikipedia page for that. You know how you you can look up a Wikipedia page for Babe Ruth, go to it, yada yada, kind of skim through it. And then I see a link that says, here's a link to Babe Ruth records. And he gets his own page for every record he owns. I mean, he owns so many records, I couldn't even get them all on here. And he played from 1914 to 1935. The dude hasn't played a baseball game since 1935, and he owns so many records in baseball, it's insane. You can't not put Babe Ruth at number one. He played outfielder, and he was also a pitcher. He's one of the few players to ever do that, by the way. I mean, we currently have Shohei Ohtani doing it, and in my opinion, I think Shohei Ohtani's better at doing both of them over Babe Ruth, but he is not Babe Ruth, people, okay? Babe Ruth played for the Boston Red Sox, the New York Yankees, and the Boston Braves. He is a seven-time champion. He won championships in 1915, 1916, 1918, 1923, 1927, 1928, and 1932. He was the AL MVP in 1923, AL batting champion, 12-time AL home run leader, five-time AL RBI leader, AL ERA leader. He is part of the Major League Baseball All-Century team, Major League Baseball All-Time team. And, yeah, here's some more stats on Babe Ruth. First batter to hit 30 home runs in one season during the 1920 season. First batter to hit 40 home runs in one season during the 1920 season. First batter to hit 50 home runs in a season, 54 in 1920. First batter to hit 60 home runs in a season, 60 in 1927. First batter to hit 500 home runs in a career, August 11th, 1929. First on all-time slugging percentage with .690. First on all-time OPS with 1.164. First on all-time OPS plus with 206. Second on all-time on-base percentage list with .474. Second on all-time at-bats per home runs list with 11.6. Third on all-time RBI list with 2,213. Third on all-time home run list with 714. Third on all-time bases on balls list with 2,062. Fourth on all-time runs list with 2,174. Tied with Hank Aaron. Seventh on all-time total bases list with 5,793. Ninth on all-time batting average list with 342, tied with the Dan Brothers. And that's just what I decided to put there. He owns more records than that. And it's nuts. It is just nuts, the dude's impact on this game. First of all, when I discussed the home run leader, you know, I was talking about Hank Aaron, who had 755. Well, he had to break Babe Ruth's record of 714. To get there. And that was in 1935. And then Hank Aaron did it in what, the 70s? Yeah. So Babe Ruth is the greatest baseball player of all time. Still, to this day. Dude has a fucking candy bar named after him. By the way, I love Baby Ruths. Fucking love Baby Ruths. I don't think they're a popular type of candy bar for most people, but I personally love me a Baby Ruth. His career stats, batting average 342. 2,873 hits, 714 home runs, 2,214 RBIs, and as a pitcher, his win-loss record, 94 wins, 46 losses, with a career ERA of 2.28. Really, if you have never looked up what Babe Ruth has done for the game, do it. Seriously, if you're a real baseball fan, you're into this shit like I am, it was very eye-opening. I mean, I've always known his impact on the game. I mean, he's Babe fucking Ruth, for Christ's sake. You don't just talk about this dude because he was a nobody. No, you talk about him because he's a goat. He is the goat. He started this gangsta shit, and this is the motherfucking thanks he gets. Number one on my list, hands down. It wasn't even a question. And I believe he's number one on pretty much everybody's list, too. But this guy, he did it all, and he was fantastic and phenomenal. It doesn't matter what era you play in, by the way. A lot of people like to hold it against him. He played against plumbers and firefighters, and they weren't the way they are today. Go fuck yourself. Babe Ruth's domination was something else. All of these guys' domination was something else. That's why they made this list. And, I mean, everybody's list could be a little bit different, and they'll put guys differently, but I'm going to be straight up with you. If you don't have Babe Ruth number one, you don't know shit. All right, guys, we got a great weekend of playoff basketball and just great baseball. We do have a UFC fight I didn't talk about because it's not a championship contender and didn't really have any fighters I really cared to talk about, but we do have that on tap. So enjoy the jam-packed weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to say it, even though I don't believe in them, go Lakers, bitches!